afternoon from 2 to 4 on KPFK 90.7 FM.
Rock that boogie!
Yo, what's up, everybody? This is Will Dog from Ozo Motley. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara. Welcome to the car show every week, every Saturday, coming at you for over 50 years on 90.7 KPFK FM Los Angeles. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. I am joined this week and every week by my favorite co-host in the world, our Orange County Bureau Chief, a practicing attorney, a member of the Motor Press Guild, and the owner of not one but two Mazdas, a Miata, and an RX-8, which it's itself, I mean, that should get an award of some kind. Michelle Spencer, welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. Good to be here with you again.
And this week, we also have a very special co-host. We are honored to have he is president and chief analyst of Auto Pacific. So he knows actually a lot about cars and the car market. He is, they give authoritative automotive research and insight. This week's guest co-host, Ed Kim. Welcome, Ed.
Hey, Mark and Michelle. Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
We are glad to have you. And let's get right down into it. This is how many days until Christmas? It's 3 days until Christmas. So I hope you have done all your Christmas shopping. I hope you somebody went out there and bought me a Lamborghini. Anyone. I'm not. Well, not an Urus, please. Don't buy that one.
I was going to say, not the Urus.
Mark, you're better than that.
Not a Sturato. I don't know what I would do with a Sturato.
You're getting spoiled now.
In fact, I think I don't want a Lamborghini. I want
a Maserati.
It's so easy to get sidetracked on this show. we're going to list off a couple of calendar items here. If you don't find what you're looking for among our calendar items, I recommend that you try out SoCalCarCulture.com. They list about 100 things a day on weekends, and there's even stuff going Mondays through Fridays, too. So check them out, SoCalCarCulture.com. We don't get a nickel from them. I don't think they know we exist, but it's a cool resource. The thing you want to look at is coming up Sunday, December 29th. It's called the Holiday Motoring Excursion. It is for Brass Era Touring. There are fewer Brass Era cars in the world, mainly because so many of the owners are up in car guy heaven now. But the remaining guys are out. They used to do this just for cars 1915 and earlier. But if you have a 1932 or older stock vehicle, you are welcome to apply. This event, the Holiday Motoring Excursion, takes place Sunday, December 29th. And they all gather together between 7:30 and 9:30 in Arcadia Park. That's at 405 South Santa Anita Avenue in Arcadia, California. Now, from 7:30 to 9:30, they're all lining up there. And then the tour departs at 9:30. If you don't have one of those cars and you haven't registered for this event, you cannot go on the tour. But, theoretically, you could, chase along behind them. And the first couple of stops, they have free donuts. So if you manage to weasel your way on there, I guess I shouldn't be saying that. But anyway, it's fun. You can sign up if you have one of those cars. Has to be a 1932 or older stock vehicle. Sign up at SoCalHCCA.com. Or you just Google Holiday Motoring Excursion and it will come up. And if you go to that web address, you can see videos of previous tours too, and give you an idea of what the cars are. They're always pretty interesting, and it's fun to do. I think it's the Sunday between Christmas and New Year's traditionally, and they've done it for, I want to say over 60 years now. I think this is the 62nd year of this. It started out just some local car guys with old cars they would all pile the kids into the car and they'd go over to the cousin's house to see what they got for Christmas. And then those cousins would pile into their old car and they would go around. You can go to autoweek.com, search Autoweek, and look up holiday motoring excursion. I've written about it many times. Anyway, it's fun to check out. Another event that same day, December 29th. So you start your day up there in Arcadia. Then you get down the 710 to the SoCal Cycle Swap Meet, December 29th, Long Beach Veterans Stadium. I have never been to this thing, but it looks like it would be a lot of fun. You are always looking for an excuse to ride your motorcycle. Here it is being handed to you on a silver platter. The website is SoCalCycleSwapMeet.com. That's December 29th, Sunday, December 29th, Long Beach Veterans Stadium. The address is 5000 Lou Davis Street in Long Beach, L-E-W Davis Street in Long Beach. Guaranteed fun time. Michelle, tell us about the sad end of Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the third event we want to tell you about on the same day, Sunday, the 29th of December, is the very last event they're going to hold at the Zimmerman Automobile Driving Museum in El Segundo.
That's a damn shame.
Yeah, isn't it?
It takes money to run these things.
It does.
You've been, Ed, haven't you? You've been to that?
I have, and I absolutely love that museum. I'm really, really sad to see it go.
Mm-hmm. You and a lot of us, and it had a good run.
Yeah.
And so many events that were held there. And I know a lot of us journalists went to events there for vehicle launches and special things. And then the public would go, and on Sundays you could go out in an actual Model A or Model T, check out Shirley Muldowney's old drag racer, all of in Packards and Cadillacs and all kinds of things. It's just a wonderful place. And I just
closing
don't know
down. And
how.
What is that last? What is that final event?
Well, it's actually a Cadillac event. Yes,
yeah.
It's a Cadillac event, and this is called Cadillac Fest. It's the 13th one. It's going from 10 to 3. If you want to go, you have to register at the automobiledrivingmuseum.org, and it's $25 to register. And I do believe that registrations are still available. And if you need the address, it's 610 Lairport Street in El Segundo in the South Bay off the 405.
And what's their website again?
automobiledrivingmuseum.org.
Great. Excellent. And since we're on the topic of I guess it's all gone now, Irwindale.
Event is today.
Okay. Oh, that's today. Oh,
that's today. Tonight. Saturday. Yeah, all day Saturday and into Saturday night.
Ah, so sad.
I know. Yeah. Another one. So this month we're saying goodbye to two Southern California car-related institutions. And then, of course, we had to say goodbye to Fontana, the racetrack there.
Yeah.
It's been a rough year for people here in Southern California.
Yeah. So for Irwindale, the final farewell party is December 21st. And go check that out. See if there are still tickets at IrwindaleSpeedway.com. It's quite possible that they will sell out. The grandstands there hold 6,500 people. And they're going to throw the everything out tonight. ARCA Menard Series West Pro late models, super late models, modified street stocks, legends, enduros, figure eights, jet car burn down. Who doesn't like a jet car burn down? Trailer races, invitation only drift competitions, RV, auto, soccer, and more. And it'll all be finished off with fireworks. So that is the sad news today. But it's not all sad. We have more coming up. What else do we have, Michelle? What's next on our calendar of fun times?
Well, in January, it was King of the Hammers.
King of the Hammers. Now, I've been out to that. Ed, have you been out to that?
I have not. Actually, fill me in, because I actually have no idea what this is, but it sounds intriguing just from the name.
Michelle, you have not. I don't believe you have been out to it.
No.
It is the hardest off-roading I think you could do. It's worse than rock crawling. You have to, it's like, imagine a very steep gully filled with boulders the size that range in size between washing machines and Volkswagens. And there are these guys in these Jeep-like obviously they're made just for this purpose, but they have the 7 slats of Jeeps on the front grill, and those things are going up these, and they're actually doing a race. That's King of the Hammers. It's actually a 2-week long thing. The first week is King of the Motos. It's all about motorcycles. And the second week is King of the Hammers. Check out the website, kingofthehammers.com. You can get in there for, let's see, camping for an RV is $38.45. It's like they translated it from euros or something. How did it come with the 45 cents? King of the Motos, 3-day pass, $27.90. Kids 12 and under free. So you park your RV out there for $38, or you can volunteer. I don't know what kind of deals they have for volunteers, but and then there's a top, you know, for the people who want to do it first class all the way. There's a $595 ticket that you get your own climate controlled lounge adjacent to the race course and your own restrooms. $595. So I don't believe that includes lodging, but this event, it takes place on Johnson Valley. I think it's Johnson Valley dry lake bed. And last year was it? I think it was last year when it rained and it all turned into mud and it was a mess. So normally it's a dust fest. So it's either a dust fest or a mud fest, one or the other. But it turns out, I think they have about 100,000 people out there for this event to watch, to see who will be King of the Hammers. There's a number of events that take place just about every day, but you can find out on kingofthehammers.com what exactly is going on for that. So that
I'm have to check that out. This is the first I've ever heard of it, but I am intrigued.
I haven't been in several years and I still have dust in my nostrils and ears from that. So just get ready for dust and don't expect to be clean and ever after you go to this.
It's basically the Coachella of off-roading.
Okay, that's a good analogy.
All right.
I'm getting the picture here.
All right. Michelle, is this yours? January 1st? Vintage? Oh, right. Tell us.
Yes, on New Year's Day, the Vintage Japanese Motor Union is having a gathering for, guess what? Vintage Japanese cars.
Who would have thought?
And very, it's cool. At their clubhouse. They're celebrating their one-year anniversary. And they did have a party last year to launch, so this will be their second big event, and it's at 611 Anderson Street. It's down there in the Arts District in downtown LA.
Have either of you been there?
No.
Not to this event, have you?
Not to the event, but I have been to the venue. It's a pretty neat venue. I mean, it's not big, but it's just this wonderful hangout where, you know, you and other like-minded Japanese vintage car enthusiasts can just hang out and enjoy the scene, enjoy each other's cars. You can buy things there, but that's not really the point. It's really just kind of a really cool hangout for people who are into Japanese vintage cars. And, you know, especially with millennials and Gen Xers like myself, you know, now at that life stage where, you know, we're interested in getting cars of our youth. Well, you know, Japanese cars are a huge part of the youth of or the younger years of millennials and Gen X. So that scene's gotten huge.
True.
I keep waiting for the prices to skyrocket on those things. I was thinking, you know, like 30
Me
years
too.
Ago, I thought I should buy an RX-7, you know, the final, and I didn't buy it. And I don't know if I don't think you can say skyrocketed yet. It's not like Duesenbergs and
right.
Oh, well,
Miuras and things.
It never will be, but the prices for those FDs, which are the last ones they sold in the early 90s, those are seriously, they're in the auction catalogs and people are spending good money on them.
Well, have you seen
this? So many of them got trashed. There's not too many of them left.
Modified. Try and find a stock one.
Or they'll blow up. Yeah. They'll blow up from getting modified.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Turbo.
Right. So, or if you've seen the prices on Supras of Toyota Supras of that era as well, you know, similar story. I mean, you know, you find a really clean, unmodified one, especially with a manual and especially as a turbo, and geez, I mean, you know, that can get into six figures. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. Very rare. And I'm really regretting selling my 1990 Prelude.
Are those are those worth big bucks?
No. Hey, I could go to this thing on January 1st and be, you know. It's vintage.
Yeah. Well, and especially now that, you know, a new Prelude is later this year. Later next year.
I am so excited. Did you see the pictures?
I have, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a story up at autoweek.com on that new one. You can
check
it out.
Of course there is. Go there.
Of course there is.
Check it out. So there's nothing you need to do for this gathering on January 1st. Just show up.
It's 12 noon. Does it say how long it goes? Just till the last guy leaves?
Listen, till the cows come home.
Yeah, there you go. It's cash. California.
Till the Kobe beef goes home. Not just couch. Okay.
There you go.
So 1 year anniversary party. Bring your ride, hang out, buy parts. What more do you need? Michelle, here's another one of yours.
Oh, right. Okay. This is heads up for mid-January, and then we'll probably have to move on to other things. But In-N-Out Burger has a Cruisin' to Freedom event. And this is going to happen on January 18th. And it's a multi-stage event. So it starts off with a car cruise. They're going to meet in Huntington Beach and cruise to the Orange County Fairgrounds, where they're going to have a party and an auction. So all the proceeds go to benefit organizations that combat human trafficking, which In-N-Out Burger apparently has identified as a huge problem, mm-hmm. and is here to fund some other organizations who go to bat to get this scourge out of our society.
Wonderful.
And so it's
so
going
to... So what time does it... It starts in Huntington.
At 3.
What time does it start in Huntington?
At 3.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And then after that, there's a party that goes till like midnight at the county fairgrounds in Orange County.
So cruise from Huntington Beach to OC Fairgrounds. That sounds like a good cruise.
Yeah. And so you sign up. Fun. You can sign up for like whatever part of that event you want to. You can do just the cruise, or you can do the cruise and then the dinner and the party. And if you want to, there's even a thing where you can sponsor a table at the dinner and invite 4 of your friends or 3 of your friends. So you have to go to slavetonothing.org to sign up for whatever part you want to participate in. And it's slave with a number 2.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Mm-hmm. We are moving on to the news section now. We're like 2 minutes early, 3 minutes early to the news section. But we're doing this because we have expert Ed Kim here with us. So Ed has brought in a couple of interesting topics, I think, having to do, well, I don't know. We hear all these things in the news cycle about Chinese vehicles. And
we sure do.
I don't know. You guys did a study of them. What do you have, Ed?
Yeah, so obviously the topic of Chinese vehicles has really kind of been at the forefront of automotive for, you know, for quite some time, but especially over this past year, with the current and outgoing administration, having enacted big tariffs on Chinese EVs, the topic of Chinese vehicles is very much at the forefront. And years ago, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, in one of our surveys, we did ask the question about, consumer willingness to consider a Chinese vehicle. And 10, 15 years ago, the number was, really pretty modest. But given the fact that, this topic has now resurfaced, and Chinese vehicles today are very different from the Chinese vehicles of 10 to 15 years ago, we thought we'd ask the question again, and in fact, ask the question in more detail. So what we did was we put out a survey, and we asked consumers about their willingness to consider a Chinese brand vehicle. And the results were actually... The results were actually pretty surprising to us, in the sense that positive consideration was a lot higher than we thought it would be. About 73% of people under 40. Let me look at this data here.
There's a lot of misinformation and hysteria about Chinese vehicles, especially electric cars. Yeah. So you found what did your survey say?
So basically what we found is that 76% of consumers under the age of 40 say that they would absolutely consider buying a Chinese brand vehicle. 76%. So that's about three quarters of people who are under the age of 40 said, yeah, absolutely, I would consider a Chinese brand vehicle. And it's, and if you really think about it, it intuitively makes sense when you think of the state of social media, how we get our information nowadays. People have, access to, information about products from all over the world. And if you open up TikTok or you open up Instagram, I mean, some of the first things you see are just, little Instagram stories about the latest Chinese vehicle. Look what it can do here. It can, move sideways and do this and that. And it only costs $15,000. And, so there's a lot more awareness nowadays among especially younger consumers about what Chinese vehicles are, what they're capable of, the advanced technologies they have. And all that. So we were, like I said, quite surprised to find that 76% of people under 40 said they would definitely consider one. What we do find after that is with each decade age break, that consideration goes down. So among
people, I was going to say, it does not sound like our typical NASCAR loving reader would probably disparage it in the comments section, I would guess. And it sounds like that's what you found in your survey.
Yeah. So like I said, it was 76% of people under 40, but for people from 40 to 49, that number drops to, 58%. So 58% of people in their 40s say, okay, I'd consider a Chinese vehicle. Then you get to the age break of 50 to 59, and that plummets down to 42%. And then once you get to people over 60, well, they're not interested. Only 26% of people over 60 say that they would be willing to consider a Chinese brand vehicle.
Ed, have you driven any Chinese vehicles?
Well, I guess if you count Polestar 2 and Volvo S60, S90L. Yeah, I guess I have.
What about, you mentioned the $15,000 Chinese electric vehicle. Is that a mythical thing, or is that actually being sold in other markets like Europe?
It is not mythical, but we have to be careful when we read kind of these clickbaity headlines of saying, BYD sells, this amazing EV for only $10,000.
Right.
It's not really $10,000. What it is that that's a direct currency conversion from the Chinese currency to U.S. dollars. If that car was sold here in the U.S., it would certainly cost more than $10,000. Some of these vehicles are already making their way to Europe. They definitely cost more than $10,000.
Do they meet what we would consider government safety standards, for instance? Because, 10 grand, you're not going to get that many airbags or a lot of CAD design in your crumple zone, I would imagine.
Well, that's the thing though. The advances that Chinese automakers have made over the last 10, 15 years is tremendous. And frankly, guess where they got the knowledge from? They got it from Western automakers.
I don't know. What's that? Would you say strong-armed it from Western automakers? Like, if you want to set up shop in China, and is this a myth too? If you want to set up shop in China, you have to basically give them all your technology and 51% of whatever entity.
Yeah, that's not a myth.
Yeah, that's not a myth. Okay.
I know that's not a myth.
All right.
No, that is very real. That is very true. It was absolutely a very effective tool that China used to gain access to technology from the West and technology from Korea and Japan, the one and only Western automaker that was able to get around this rule was Tesla. Tesla does build and sell vehicles in China. They are the only Western automaker who actually got permission from the Chinese government to not pair up with a local automaker.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
Let's call up Elon.
Yeah.
Where is his phone number?
Oh, he's busy. He's in Florida.
Yeah, he's busy. Yeah, he's at Mar-a-Lago in Florida or something.
Florida, that's a good euphemism.
But in any case, no, that's not a myth. That is absolutely true. So, and they've used that to, you know, build up their own technology and their own auto industry at an extremely rapid pace. That's just, I mean, it makes my head spin how fast they've done it. But they've done it because they've learned very fast, and they got access to all the best technology from markets outside of China. And here's where we're at now.
Apart from the Polaris and the Volvos that I think all three of us have driven, when is an actual, like a Chery or Big Wall or some other Chinese branded car going to come that looks distinctly different from what's on the market now, that maybe is more representative of what is on the Chinese market? How long until those are in showrooms here in the U.S.?
Well, I would say it's going to be a minimum of several years. And the reason for that is, you know, obviously the
okay, so I'll be dead by then is what you're saying. I got you.
Hopefully not. I don't want you to die, but.
Michelle, the show is now yours. Take over.
Oh, no. You don't have a heart attack, please.
Yeah. Don't do that. Okay.
Don't do that.
So several years. I mean, that could mean anything.
But the reason I say that is because, you know, so obviously there are tariffs in place. So several Chinese automakers, including BYD, have been scouting Mexico for manufacturing locations. Under the current USMCA rules, the free trade agreement between US, Canada, and Mexico, there isn't anything preventing a Chinese automaker from setting up a factory in Mexico or the US or, you know, Canada, and then building the cars here and selling them here. I think right now China is absolutely adopting a wait and see sort of a strategy because, you know, the incoming administration is nothing if not unpredictable. No one really knows, what they're going to do relative to China. During the campaign, Trump did allude to possibly being open to talking to Chinese automakers about setting up manufacturing plants in the U.S. But that doesn't really mean anything yet because, I mean, he's not president yet and we don't really know what he has in mind. So,
yeah, he often says things and doesn't follow through. He and Elon, maybe that's why they get along so well.
Exactly.
So we really don't know then what's going to happen because the USMCA thing is, you know, everybody, all these manufacturers saying, hey, we had a deal, man. You said if we made factories in Mexico, mm-hmm. then we could ship the cars and sell them in the U.S.
Right,
and now it's
right.
looking like, you know, tariffs are coming or maybe they're not coming. It's very confusing, I think, for the consumers and for the manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. It is very confusing. And the way it's all going down is very classically Trump. You know, we've seen it in his first presidency where, you know, he'll kind of come out swinging with some sort of very outlandish proclamation and everyone gets in a tizzy about it. And he uses that as basically the starting point for negotiations. So, so we don't really know where this is all going to go, but what is true though, and what isn't going to change is that 100% tariff on Chinese built EVs. That's going to stick around. So, it's not likely that we're going to start seeing, you know, vehicles being imported from China anytime soon. But it is possible that we could see North American manufacturing of Chinese developed vehicles sometime in the coming years. But, you know, keep in mind, it takes years and years to build a factory and all that, which is why I said several years. You know, even if something happened today, a deal was struck, and, you know, then, you know, that Chinese automaker would then have to, you know, find a place to build a plant, which takes years to do, build a distribution and retail network in the States. I mean, you know, all this stuff takes time. So,
Well, the Chinese built cars that we have all driven, I think at least two or three Polaris's, Polari, however the plural of that is, and the Volvos.
Yeah,
I have not had a problem with those. They seem to be well constructed. You know, it's not a problem that you might think, oh, this is not a first world car, for instance. It seems
absolutely
to be a well finished, well thought out, and more or less addressing the needs of American buyers, just those first ones that we've seen.
Right. And, you know, remember these, you know, modern Chinese cars are built by the same robots, you know, by the same manufacturing processes, the same materials, you know, as cars from anywhere else. So just like everything else related to automotive, the Chinese automakers have learned how to build cars, you know, to the standards that we here in the West would expect. So, you know, it's definitely not a question of whether the cars themselves are ready.
That discussion that you just heard on Chinese cars actually started because Ed was talking about a survey that they did. So right. we can get off on down all kinds of cul-de-sacs. Michelle, yes?
Yeah, my question for Ed is this. I think what you should do is after there is an actual Chinese built vehicle that somehow, you know, is going to be presented to the Americans, do the survey again and show them the car and explain what all the features are and say, would you be interested in this?
Oh, you know, we will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we will.
People will say things hypothetically, right? But if you show them something, you'll probably get a lot more acceptance.
Yeah. Well, what's also interesting too is that you know, Mexico has no such import tariffs on Chinese cars, and you know, all of us being here in the Southland, I mean, Chinese cars are all over the place here in California. They all have Mexican license plates, but I see a Chinese built vehicle like almost daily. The ones I seem to see the most are MGs.
Those look really cool.
Because that's obviously that historically that's an English, a very English nameplate.
Yes.
It's very British. But
I've seen those at Goodwood. The last couple of times I've been to Goodwood, MG has a huge display and the things just look fascinating. I mean, really exciting looking cars.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen one here though.
I've seen quite a few, and you know, they've got a full lineup of things. I mean, they've got everything from compact crossovers, all the way to sedans. They just came out with this very cool kind of a almost sort of like an EV6 looking, very coupe like, sporty EV. They're definitely out there. You know, I've definitely seen BYDs around here. They're out there.
Now, you've done another survey comparing Democrats and Republicans. Now, this may not surprise us. What do you say, Ed? Are we going to be surprised by the results of your survey of the views of Democrats and Republicans in terms of electric vehicles?
Well, the surprise is that, the unsurprising part is what you think it is, which is that Democrats are, tend to be more into electric cars than Republicans. But what is surprising is that the gap isn't as big as you would think. So looking at our data here, among EV owners right now, 54% of EV owners are Democrats, 30% of EV owners are Republicans, and 16% of EV owners consider themselves independent or third party. So basically that means that only a little over half of EV owners today actually identify as Democrats. And then when you look at what we call EV acceptors, so these are people who don't necessarily own an EV, but they're absolutely open to owning one in the future. What we see there is that Democrats actually dip below 50%. Down to 46%. Republicans stay about the same, but the big rise comes from the independent / third party people who, a big boost from them. Democrats are still kind of dominant as far as EVs go, but I think this is all attributable to a couple of important factors. One is that EVs are now getting more mainstream. You know, 10 years ago, EVs were, you know, very new. They attracted early adopters. They attracted people who, you know, were really into the environment and all those and all these issues. But now, I mean, you know, now we have $35,000 Chevy Equinox EVs that, you know, I mean, these are very mainstream. These are vehicles that are targeted right at a mainstream audience, not necessarily these early adopters who used to be the EV customer. So just because they're positioned more mainstream, you're going to get a wider variety of customers. The second thing I think is at play is Elon Musk. Over the last couple of years, and especially in the last year, we've seen him do a, not just kind of a swing to the right, but I mean, the most wild, sharp swing to the right you could possibly imagine. You know, in a lot of ways, he's become sort of a right-wing hero. One could make the case that the Cybertruck is sort of a vehicular MAGA hat. So that brand, which also happens to be by far and away the leader in EV sales by a huge margin, the Tesla's brand is now becoming a lot more appealing to Republicans because of, you know, you got Elon Musk, who is kind of now this MAGA hero running the show. And I think part of the effect of that is that a lot of Republicans who in the past may have said nope, not interested in an EV, now they're kind of a little more willing to take a look. So I think that's a factor as well.
Yeah, I don't know about that Cybertruck, man. I just can't figure out what's going on with that thing. And I don't know why it would appeal to either party. One thing that I see that's
Mark, I'm with you on that.
Right.
But I say that not having driven one. I've only kind of poked my head and looked around at it little bit. So I don't know. And the one time that we did get someone to drive one, for Auto Week, something broke on it. So I'm reserving judgment, at least on the drivetrain. But I think the looks speak for themselves. You know, you park it. The common joke is you park it next to, you know, the dumpster, and it's hard to tell them apart. So that might be mean. Maybe that's mean. Anyway, one part of your survey it lists the reasons people give for not wanting an electric vehicle, the so-called EV rejectors, and over half of them say they don't like the time required to plug in to charge, and and also half of them say there's no place for me to plug in or charge. I wonder if that is just if that's spoken by people who have never tried to live with an EV and don't realize that you come home, you plug it in just like you plug in your phone, and overnight you have enough electricity to get back out and do whatever driving you have to do. What do you think?
Right. Well, so that question, that specific question was directed at EV rejectors. So these are people who, who specifically said, nope, I do not want an EV. So we don't ask the same question to people who, you know, are familiar with EVs because they own one or, you know, are considering one. These are people who said, nope, don't want one, not interested. So it's pretty safe to assume that the majority of these people probably have never either driven one or tried to live with one. Auto Pacific has been researching EVs and EV consumers for, you know, as long as I can remember. And one of the truisms that has always been the case is that once you get someone behind the wheel of an EV, even that rejector is going to be, wow, okay, that's not what I expected. This is really pretty neat. So
if you give them an EV for a week, I think that will change the way they look at it.
Right.
I guess you can't really do. That's not right. Realistic.
And you know, without the context of actually living with an EV, I think for a lot of these EV rejectors, they're thinking about EV ownership in the same context as the gas car, you know, charging at a public station as opposed to charging at home, because, you know, they're accustomed to getting, you know, their cars filled up with gas at a gas station, which obviously you don't do at home. So, you know, they know that you got to go to a public charger and you got to wait a long time. And it takes a lot longer than gas. But, you know, as all of us who have, you know, lived with EVs and driven EVs extensively, you know, if you've got a home charger, that's actually more convenient than a gas station because,
I have two, I have two EVs at home and you just plug them in and forget about it. What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah. The problem is always the people who have to live in apartments or condos or other places that you can't just say, hey, landlord, I got an EV. Can you set me up with a charger?
Well, and that's,
you know, they're not going to do it. And so is it at your work? You know, and these people that you do the survey with are probably thinking, oh, wait, I don't have a charger anywhere near me. I don't have one at my work.
And we
I don't
have
one at my shopping center. I don't have one at my house.
Absolutely.
We all have experience with the lousy state of the EV charging network in the
U.S. Yes, that it doesn't work
right
half
now.
The time.
It's
yes.
getting better. It's getting better.
Yes.
But
those horror stories, aren't they?
All kinds of horror stories. Before we move on from this, I just want to make one quick comment, which is, and this is an important one. So for these EV rejectors, we gave them, you know, a list of 27 reasons why they would listen to EV or why they don't want EVs. And, you know, you just, as the respondent just checks off the ones that they say, nope, you know, yeah, I agree with the statement. But dead last out of 27, out of the 27 options were, EVs are not aligned with my political beliefs. So even among these rejectors, even they are saying that, you know, politics are not a reason why they don't want an EV. It has everything to do with practical considerations like charging and stuff like that. Charging, cost, price, all these very practical and very real considerations, but it's not politics.
It's not politics. All right, let's go from the very ecologically conscious electric vehicle to the opposite end. I drove a 1988 Jeep Grand Wagoneer. And that's not a very solid platform to begin with, even back in its day. And a guy in Johnson City, Texas, at a company called Vigilante, dropped an 807 horsepower Hellcat Redeye V8 into this thing. Was that a responsible thing to do? Heck yeah, it was. It was fun. Who doesn't want 807 horsepower in anything? Our first review, I'll just quickly get this one out of the way because Ed's got a couple of cool things to talk about in a minute. But this car, rather than simply drop the big V8 into it and watch it twist the frame apart and, you know, you're unable to stop, you're unable to go around a corner. This guy at Vigilante in Johnson City, Texas, he redid the whole thing. The chassis is now a fully boxed frame. He redid the suspension to handle it all. He's got mighty beefy 6-piston caliper on the disc brakes all the way around. He redid the steering. It was quite something. And I just want to start off with that.
Mark, I have to ask the question. 807 horsepower. That's a lot of power. I know you said he did a lot of chassis work. Does it still have solid axles?
Ask me the question. I didn't look underneath it, and I don't have it here in front of me. I don't have an answer for that. But it did. It seemed to handle well, stop well, steer well, much better than the original. Now, the question that I had, because doing this conversion, and I think they do there's nothing missing from this conversion, but it costs $250,000 to start. And you think about it, for about $100,000, you could get a modern Jeep Grand Cherokee that doesn't have that much horsepower, but it has close to it. So I just wanted to share that with you guys that this vehicle does exist. And I don't know, there are people out there saying God bless America, I'm sure, because of that. But let's move on. We've only got 58 minutes here in this show. Ed is going to take us on his, let's see, what do we have here for reviews?
Yeah.
Which one do you want to do first, Ed?
Well,
let's go. Let's do the second of your two topics on our script. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah. So Mark and Michelle, when you hear the name Dodge Charger, what comes to mind? Well, what's the imagery that comes into
smoking tires, muscle cars, guys smoking cigarettes and glowering?
Well, and growl, like the growl of the engine.
Yes.
Yeah, as it takes off. Yes.
Yes. I mean, the Charger is an iconic muscle car. Always has been. Well, not, I guess hasn't always been, because there are a few years in the 70s where it went astray. But you know, you get the idea. Anyways, you know, the Charger is now being reborn as a very, very late 2024 model year entry. It just went on sale this month. And the biggest difference between this Charger and the Charger that came before it that went out of production after the 2023 model year is that this one's all electric. It does not have a big V8 under the hood. In fact, it doesn't have any gasoline engine under the hood. It's got dual electric motors, one in the front, one in the back. And it's got a big battery pack under the floor instead of a fuel tank. It's conceptually a very, very different kind of car.
And I did drive it.
And this is a couple weeks ago at the media launch in Phoenix, Arizona.
You know, did you light up the rear tires?
Come on. Of course I did. You know, there is a drift mode where it only sends power to the rear axle, and you know, you can do all kinds of hooning about and all kinds of tomfoolery and all that. Lots of fun. It does all the muscle car things.
Does it have all-wheel drive, though?
It does have all-wheel drive, but
in the front, one in the back?
Yes, one motor in front, okay. one motor in back. But yeah, when you're drifting around, you can cut power to the front motor and make it exclusively rear drive.
Nice.
They tell you that's only for track use only. We'll see. I have a feeling.
And just before you move on, when is it available and how much does it cost?
Well, it's available now. It went on sale this month. It comes in two forms. The base comes as either an RT, and also comes as a, oh my God.
Scat pack?
The scat pack.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. As a scat pack. So the scat pack has, the horsepower is in the 600s. It's very, very, it's
okay. That's it's more close, than enough.
Yeah. It's very close to where the Hellcat used to be.
Good.
Then the RT has something like around 400, something close to 500. So,
yeah.
You know, not excellent. As much as the scat pack, but it's got plenty. But the real important point here, though, is it's not so much the car's fun. The car's great. Enjoyed it and all that. But more importantly, though, is the fact that this is a car. This is an EV, an electric vehicle that is, trying to bring, that visceral nature of a gasoline powered muscle car to an electric vehicle that is inherently very silent. And I thought it was very interesting because just before I drove that Dodge Charger, I spent a week driving the Hyundai Ioniq 5N, which is a very different kind of a car than the Dodge Charger. You know, I would call the Ioniq 5N as, you know, probably the ultimate hot hatch, you know, whereas the Dodge Charger Daytona is, you know, an electric muscle car. But they both have one very, very key thing in common. These are both electric vehicles that rely on artificial noise, artificially created noise and feedback to make it more engaging, to make it feel, you know, have at least kind of some of that gasoline car flavor, but bringing it to an EV. I have to admit, on paper, the idea sounded stupid on both cars. For me, I've always enjoyed EVs partially because they are so quiet. Like, you know, why would you interrupt that quietness with like fake noise that's not even genuine? The Ioniq 5N and the Dodge Charger do this really quite effectively in very different ways. So in the Ioniq 5N, there is a mode called N-shift mode. And if you put it in this mode, it simulates a gasoline engine with eight forward gears. It's operated by paddle shifters. And this thing is nuts. You know, so you rev the engine and, you know, the cabin fills with the sound of, you know, what sounds like a really loud four cylinder. And when you shift through it, the car actually jerks. They've programmed in jerks in the powertrain. So when you hit the upshift paddle, the car jerks right. as you continue accelerating. When you let off the throttle, the back speakers emit this loud crackle, you know, kind of like on a high-performance gasoline car. So when you're downshifting and decelerating, the back of the car is crackling super loud and all that. They've even gone so far as to limit the torque in each of those eight fake ratios to simulate the actual, you know, torque and power curves that you would actually get in those gears if it was a gasoline car. So if you're at 30 miles an hour and you have the car in, you know, fake fifth gear and you mass the throttle, it's not going to really do much because you're in this fake fifth gear. No, you got to downshift it to make it start going.
All right.
Super fun.
But that, it doesn't actually change the ratios. It's all a single reduction gear, right? It's a single
yes.
speed.
It's right. a single okay. speed. This is all software.
It's just lying to you. It's perfect for LA, you know, where nobody
right.
nobody's real. Nothing's real. So.
Very true. Now let me contrast that really quick with what Dodge is doing on the Charger Daytona. And they've got something called the Fratzonic exhaust. What do you mean? So an exhaust, why would an electric car have an exhaust? I mean, it's not emitting anything, right? Well,
right.
It's got a massive speaker and resonator under the rear of the vehicle. They have tuned this thing so that it is louder than a Hellcat when you rev it. See, that's that Ioniq 5N. You only hear the noise on the inside. You don't hear any of that noise on the outside. Well, that's not the case with the Charger. You hear the noise loud and clear both inside the car and outside the car. You can wake up the entire neighborhood. You know, you can do all those sort of you know, obnoxious muscle car things. That's super fun and all that. But I think, you know, the point here is that automakers are trying to combat the notion that electric cars have no soul. Among so many car enthusiasts, we've heard this time and time again. Yeah, they're fast and all that, but they have no soul. Well, here's Hyundai and Dodge trying to prove that, you know, actually, mm-hmm. you can actually build some soul into an electric car. Well, you can make it engaging, make it visceral, make it a lot of fun.
Well, now, Ed, you just having just driven both of these, do they have soul?
Yeah, I would say they do. Now, it's a different kind of a soul than, you know, say a car with a real gasoline engine, because you're always aware that, you know, this isn't real. But they are fun. They are a lot of fun. And the beauty of it is that you can instantly turn all that racket off when you're done, you know,
right.
with all that noise. But, you know, they're both tremendously fun. They're both tremendously enjoyable. I would be happy to own either one, you know, in my driveway. I'd say they both cars have soul in a different kind of context than a gas car, but it's
true. Do you happen to remember the just off the top of your head any 0 to 60 times for either of these? I just wonder how they compare to muscle.
They're very similar. The Charger Daytona Scat Pack, I believe, is 0 to 60 in 3.3 seconds.
That's okay. That's more than enough. That's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah. And the Ioniq 5N, I can't remember the exact number, but it was right about the same. It was like in the threes. So they're both. I think in a drag race, they'd be pretty much neck and neck.
That'd be a great drag race.
Oh yes, it would.
What would it be? America versus Korea or something?
Yep. Something like,
yeah. I see a Motor Trend cover story.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up.
All right.
That's
lots
good.
Of fun.
And then
good stuff, Kim.
Wow. Yeah. Let's see. You also have something to say about less a muscle car question and more an infotainment question.
Ed's
really been doing a lot lately, and we want to, you know, this is our first time getting him on the show, so we want to milk him for all he's worth. tell us about this.
So General Motors
You have like a minute and a half.
Okay.
He's got 3 minutes at least.
GM but we want Mark's touch.
We got to get to the Christmas story, too.
Yeah.
So, So GM has been taking CarPlay out of their electric vehicles. And this has been very controversial because people really like CarPlay. People understand how it works. You know, it works basically like your phone. And we all know how to operate our phones. So, you know, it's been very popular. Even our own data has shown time and time again that, yeah, this is a must-have feature. People love it. Don't take away CarPlay. Well, GM is taking away CarPlay out of their EVs, you know, for a variety of reasons I won't get into. But GM also supplies one of their EVs to Honda, and that EV would be the Honda Prologue. So the Prologue is a Honda EV that's actually built by General Motors and has all the same software and all, you know, same hardware and software as its GM counterpart, the Chevrolet Blazer EV. Why this vehicle was so interesting to me was it has the GM infotainment system, but it also has CarPlay. So I was able to do a back-to-back test of using GM's Google built-in infotainment and in the same car also using CarPlay.
And
I found that at this point in time, at the GM system's current level of execution, CarPlay wins.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. CarPlay still wins.
Yeah, CarPlay still
Bill
wins.
Bill Gates defeats, I don't know, who's GM? Mary Barra. There we go. All right, thanks for that.
I guess you say Tim Cook. Tim Cook beats
Tim Cook. Okay, yeah. Let's go with Tim Cook. All right. Okay, now we go to the sentimental part of the show because, as you know, 3 days away from Christmas. Wait, 24 minus one is three. 3 days away. And it's Christmas, and we have to tie this up the end of the year with a Christmas story, and it has to do with cars, or in this case, a truck. And I want to relate to you an experience that I had. How many years ago was this? I don't even remember how many years ago. It was 2 days before Christmas, over a decade ago. And let's just say that I knew a guy who knew a guy. And before you knew it, I was riding Tail Gunner in the back of a 1957 Mack fire truck coursing through the small town of San Gabriel, California, with no less than Santa Claus himself sitting up on top, waving to the good people of the town. It's an annual tradition, and they all poured out on their balconies and they waved at Santa. They were waving gleefully at the great red fat man. And it's a thing that you can do. Just about anybody who wants to show up can do this on a couple of nights before Christmas. You can crawl up into the fire truck and go through the town, and you wave to everybody. And the truck's usually, it's full of kids on the back bench, and they have one responsible adult who sits at the end of the bench to keep the kids from falling out the back of the fire truck. And that was my job, was to sit there and make sure none of the six kids riding on the bench over what used to be the water tank rolled out of the truck. And they told me to buckle up. This was a 1957. For you tech guys, this was a 1957 B125F Mack fire truck. It had a straight six gasoline engine, 5-speed manual transmission. It had been with the San Gabriel Fire Department for many, many years, and now was gracefully retired to duties like this. And so we drove around through the town after the Christmas tree lighting ceremony. Mr. Claus, Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus were there, and we drove this through the town yelling Merry Christmas to everybody. It was so much fun. Merry Christmas to the old lady in the wheelchair. Merry Christmas to the teenagers having a party on the second floor apartment. Merry Christmas to Fong's restaurant. Merry Christmas to the poor saps working the drive-thru at KFC. Merry Christmas to the scary looking dude in the Raiders cap. Merry Christmas, you old building and loan. They all came out. They were people who might have, there were some old couples who had just gotten, had their houses new in San Gabriel, and some who had just gotten off of the jet and were new immigrants. And they must have been thinking, what a place this is where the locals worship this large man, where they throw free candy by his delighted elves at the back of his magnificent fire limo. What a great country. What a wonderful world. Merry Christmas to all. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks, President and Chief Analyst of Auto Pacific. Thanks so much for joining us.
And thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
Here on The Car Show. Mm-hmm.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for your donations and overwhelming support of this listener-sponsored community radio, KPFK. It is the support of listeners like you that keeps this station strong, fiercely independent, and powered by the people. Thank you from all of us at Pacifica Radio's KPFK 90.7 FM.
KPFK, your progressive media outlet, is listener-supported commercial-free radio. But did you know you don't have to wait for the station fund drives to support your favorite radio station? You can donate online.